A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin, if there's any area of human life that is most bound up with complex bureaucracy, it's probably customs. But it's a really fascinating world. We've talked about how supply chains work, Incoterms, and how when you're buying stuff from Alibaba, for anyone who's tried to do that or done it, thinking it will be anything like AliExpress, it's a very different world. Quotation based on the purchasing side, there isn't typically a price. You send out an RFQ, an RFP, you get back quotes, but then when you order as well, you order according to a certain Incoterm, and you often have to. Now, here's what I'd love to ask. If you're, let's say, a small business and you wanted to import maybe furniture from China, and you're doing it now with the level of, you know, 40 foot containers of goods, can you develop your own expertise in customs clearance? And is there like a license? I'm talking about here in Israel, but also generally for listeners in other countries. I think people have sometimes wondered if they have there's a specific supply chain they've heard about that works very well from China. Is this something that you can actually study for and pass an exam, or even do it without an exam? Or do you have to appoint a import agent? And if you do have to appoint an import agent, someone who's going to handle the customs clearance and the bureaucracy on the importing side, how does that actually work? And of course, every transaction, import-export, has the export side as well. You'd often assume when you're looking at doing an export transaction like this that you need to figure out a freight forwarder or a customs broker on the import side in Israel. And that export, the seller just takes care of that. And that's often not a safe assumption. So let's look at the basics of this if you were looking to do this as a small business. And specifically regarding the Incoterms, the kind of source of truth in e-commerce, what is the Incoterms that cover an export process in which the seller handles the clearance out of the country? What is the unusual Incoterm that is truly door-to-door? And what are the more common ones for an importer that it's either delivered to a port or somewhere closer to the delivery address or even door-to-door in a true mirror of the B2C process? Herman and Corin, let's talk about how importing works for small businesses. Is it something that can be even partially DIY'd, or do you have to hand the keys over to somebody who's read those very long customs manuals?
Daniel sent us this one. He's been looking at the actual mechanics of importing. You're a small business. You want to bring in furniture from China. 40-foot containers, the real deal. And the question is, can you do your own customs clearance? Is there a license you can study for, or do you have to hand the keys to a customs broker? And then the second piece, on the export side, would Incoterms actually cover the seller handling export clearance? Which one is the true door-to-door option? And which ones are the common middle ground where you're not quite B2C, but you're also not abandoned at the factory gate? It's the nuts and bolts of making an import actually happen.
This is one of those questions where the answer is technically yes, practically no, and the interesting part is the gap between those two things. Let me start with the license question, because it's the cleanest part of this. In Israel, customs clearance is governed by the customs ordinance and the customs agent's law. You can absolutely represent yourself. Any importer can clear their own goods through customs. There's no legal requirement that says you must hire an agent. The moment you do it yourself, you're personally liable for every classification decision, every valuation, every tariff code. If you misclassify a shipment of wooden furniture as something with a lower duty rate, and customs audits you 2 years later, which they can do, you're on the hook for the back duties, plus fines, plus the possibility of having your shipments flagged for physical inspection going forward. Customs agents in Israel have to pass an exam administered by the Israel Tax Authority, and they carry professional indemnity insurance for exactly this reason.
The license exists, you can study for it, you can pass the exam, but the real question is whether it's worth doing for one supply chain.
Here's the thing about the exam. It's not just a weekend course. The Israeli Customs Agent exam covers the full harmonized system of tariff classification, which is thousands of codes, valuation methodology under the GAT agreement, rules of origin for free trade agreements, the full customs ordinance and its amendments. We're talking months of study. And you'd be doing it to clear, what, a few containers a month? Meanwhile, a licensed customs agent charges roughly 500 to 1500 shekels per customs declaration, depending on complexity.
The math for a small business doing one product category, say, wooden dining tables from Guangdong. You'd spend months studying a body of law that covers everything from petrochemicals to fresh produce, just to save maybe 1,000 shekels per container. That's not a business decision, that's a hobby.
A very expensive hobby with real legal consequences. And this is broadly true outside Israel, too. In the United States, customs brokers are licensed by CBP, Customs and Border Protection. You have to pass an exam that typically has a pass rate around 15 to 20%. You need to be a U.S. citizen or a lawful permanent resident, pass a background check, and maintain your license with continuing education. The exam covers everything from tariff classification to valuation, to drawback, to bonds, to intellectual property enforcement at the border.
15 to 20% pass rate. That's not a test, that's a filter.
It's designed to be. And in the European Union, the system varies by member state, but generally requires either a formal qualification or demonstrated professional competence under the Union Customs Code.
The answer to, can you DIY customs clearance, is yes, in the same sense that you can DIY your own appendectomy. Technically possible, legally allowed, almost certainly a bad idea for someone whose actual business is selling furniture.
That's where the customs broker or import agent comes in. Let me walk through how that relationship actually works, because it's not as simple as hand them your paperwork and wait. You, as the importer, are still responsible for providing accurate information. The broker is your representative, but they're not a mind reader.
So if I'm importing furniture from China, I don't just call a broker and say, there's a container coming, do your thing. What do I actually need to give them?
You need to provide, at minimum, the commercial invoice showing the transaction value, the packing list with weights and dimensions, the bill of lading or airway bill, and ideally the supplier's detailed product specifications. The broker uses these to classify your goods under the correct harmonized system code, which determines the duty rate. For furniture, that's typically Chapter 94 of the HS code, seats, bedding, mattresses, and so on. But even within that chapter, the rates vary. A wooden dining table might be under 940360, a wooden bed frame under 940350. Get it wrong, and you're either overpaying duty or underpaying and risking penalties.
This is where it gets interesting, because the broker isn't just filling out forms. They're making judgment calls about classification that have financial consequences.
They're also dealing with the regulatory side. In Israel, furniture imports can trigger standards compliance requirements under the Standards Institution of Israel. Certain wood products may need to meet formaldehyde emission standards. If your furniture has any electrical components, say a motorized standing desk, you're now also dealing with electrical safety certification. The broker doesn't do the testing, but they need to know which shipments require which certificates before customs will release them.
The broker is part tax specialist, part regulatory navigator, part logistics coordinator, and you're paying them per declaration.
That's the part that surprises a lot of first-time importers. They think they're hiring a full-service consultant who's going to hold their hand through the entire process. In reality, the customs broker's relationship with you is transactional per shipment. They'll flag issues if they see them, but they're not going to audit your supplier's documentation proactively. That's your job.
Which brings us to the export side, because, and this is the second part of the prompt, there's a dangerous assumption that the seller handles everything on their end.
This is where I see small importers get burned constantly. They negotiate a price with a supplier in China. The supplier says, we'll handle shipping, and the importer assumes that means door-to-door. Then the container arrives at Ashdod or Haifa, and suddenly there are port charges, terminal handling fees, customs duties, VAT, and a customs broker who needs to be paid before the container can be released. None of this was in the supplier's quote, because the supplier's definition of handling shipping stopped at the port of loading.
This is where Incoterms stop being abstract trade jargon and start being the difference between a profitable shipment and a disaster. Walk me through the ones that matter here.
Let me organize these by how much the seller actually handles. At the minimalist end, you've got EXW, Ex Works. The seller makes the goods available at their premises, and you handle literally everything else. You're responsible for loading, export clearance, freight, insurance, import clearance, and final delivery. It's the come-get-it-yourself, Incoter me.
Which sounds terrible for an importer, but it's actually sometimes preferred by sophisticated buyers who want full control over the logistics chain and can negotiate better freight rates than the seller.
It's not inherently bad, it's just maximum responsibility on the buyer. Now, moving up the responsibility ladder, FOB, free on board, is probably the most common Incoterm for containerized ocean freight. The seller handles everything up to and including loading the goods onto the vessel at the port of departure. They also handle export clearance in their country. Once the goods are on the ship, risk transfers to you. You arrange and pay for ocean freight, insurance, import clearance, and inland delivery.
FOB is the one where the seller does export clearance, but everything after the ship leaves is on you.
And this is where a lot of Alibaba transactions land. The supplier quotes FOB Shanghai or FOB Shenzhen, meaning they get it to the port and onto the vessel. You need a freight forwarder to handle the ocean leg and everything on the Israel side.
Then the next step up?
CIF, cost, insurance, and freight. The seller pays for the goods, the insurance, and the ocean freight to the destination port, so you've got a container arriving at Ashdod with the shipping already paid. But here's the catch. Risk still transfers when the goods are loaded onto the vessel. If the container falls off the ship in a storm, you're insured, but it's still your problem to deal with. And you still handle import clearance, duties, and inland delivery.
CIF feels more complete than it actually is. You get a container at the port, and you might think, great, it's here. But it's not released, not cleared, not delivered.
That's the trap. Now we get to the ones that actually approach door to door. DAP, delivered at place. The seller handles everything up to the named destination, including freight and all costs, but not import clearance. The goods arrive at, say, your warehouse in Tel Aviv, but the container is still under custom seal. You handle import clearance and any duties or taxes. The seller bears the risk until the goods arrive at that named place.
DAP is delivered to your door, but you do the paperwork to legally bring it in.
Then the one that was specifically asked about, the unusual one that's truly door-to-door, is DDP, delivered duty paid. The seller handles absolutely everything. Export clearance, freight, insurance, import clearance, duties, taxes, and final delivery to the named destination. The buyer essentially does nothing except receive the goods.
This is the B2C experience. You order something from AliExpress. It shows up at your door. You never think about customs. That's DDP in practice.
For a small business importing 40-foot containers, DDP is rare and expensive. The seller has to have a customs broker in Israel or work with a freight forwarder who has one. They have to prepay the duties and VAT. They're taking on all the regulatory risk, and they're going to price that risk into their quote, usually with a healthy margin.
You're paying a premium for convenience and risk transfer, which might be worth it for a first shipment, but at scale, you're leaving money on the table.
There's another problem with DDP for business importers. When the seller handles import clearance as part of DDP, they're the importer of record. That means for VAT purposes, they're the ones who can reclaim the input VAT, not you. If you're a registered business in Israel, you want to be the importer of record so you can offset the import VAT against your output VAT. Under DDP, you lose that.
That's a detail that would never occur to a first-time importer, and it's exactly the kind of thing that separates a profitable import operation from one that's just moving boxes around.
Let me give you a concrete example. Say you import a container of furniture with a customs value of 50,000 shekels. The duty rate on wooden furniture is typically around 6-8%, so let's call it 4,000 shekels in duty. VAT in Israel is 17%, applied to the customs value plus the duty, so about 9,180 shekels in VAT. Under DDP, the seller pays that VAT and builds it into their price, but you can't reclaim it. Under DAP or CIF, you pay the VAT directly to customs, and if you're a registered dealer, you reclaim it on your next VAT return. That's nearly 10,000 shekels in cash flow that you either get back or don't.
The difference between DDP and DAP on a 50,000 shekel container isn't just the broker fee. It's potentially the entire VAT amount locked up in the seller's margin.
That's before we even talk about the fact that under DDP, you have no visibility into how the goods were classified. If the seller's broker classified them under a higher duty subheading because they didn't want to argue with customs, you're paying extra duty and you don't even know it. The whole thing is a black box.
For a small business getting serious about imports, the sweet spot is probably somewhere in the middle. FOB or CIF with your own freight forwarder and customs broker on the Israel side, so you control the import process and the VAT position.
That's the standard setup, yes? And the freight forwarder is the other piece of this puzzle that I want to unpack, because people confuse freight forwarders and customs brokers all the time.
I've done that.
Most people have. A freight forwarder arranges the physical movement of goods. They book the vessel space, handle the bill of lading, arrange inland trucking, manage the container's journey from origin to destination. A customs broker handles the regulatory clearance, the classification, the duty payment, the interaction with customs authorities. Some companies do both. Some specialize in one or the other. And in Israel, many freight forwarders have in-house customs brokers, so from your perspective, it feels like a single service.
Legally, they're separate functions with separate liabilities.
In Israel, a freight forwarder doesn't need the same license as a customs agent. The customs agent has a power of attorney from you to act on your behalf before the customs authority. The freight forwarder is acting as your logistics contractor.
If I'm setting up my import operation for furniture from China, my vendor list is the supplier, a freight forwarder, and a customs broker, who might be the same company but who are functionally distinct. And I'm probably negotiating on FOB or CIF terms.
You're also thinking about something that the prompt touched on indirectly, the export side. Because even under FOB, where the seller handles export clearance, you need to verify that they actually do. Chinese export procedures require the seller to file an export declaration with China Customs. If they don't, or if they file incorrectly, your container might not make it onto the vessel. And you, the buyer, won't know until the vessel sails without your goods.
This is the not a safe assumption part. You assume the seller handles export clearance, but if they're a small factory that mostly sells domestically, they might not have anyone on staff who knows how to file an export declaration.
Or they might be using a third-party trading company that handles the export paperwork, which adds another layer between you and the actual manufacturer. This is incredibly common in China. The factory you're buying from isn't actually the exporter of record. A trading company with an export license is. And that trading company is the one filing the export declaration and appearing on the bill of lading.
Which matters because...
Because if there's a problem, say, the goods are seized at the port of departure because the export declaration doesn't match the physical cargo, you're not dealing with the factor you built a relationship with. You're dealing with a trading company whose name you might not even know.
The safe assumption here is actually, assume nothing, verify everything, and structure your Incoterms to align responsibility with capability. Don't ask a factory that's never exported before to handle export clearance on DDP terms just because you want the convenience.
That's really the core insight here. The Incoterm you choose isn't just about who pays for what. It's about who is legally responsible for each step, who bears the risk at each transfer point, and, critically, who has the local knowledge and relationships to actually execute that step competently.
Let me tie this back to the original question about DIY. Versus hiring professionals. What I'm hearing is that even if you could pass the customs agent exam and clear your own goods, you'd still need a freight forwarder. You'd still need to understand export side dynamics in China. You'd still need to navigate the standards institution requirements, and you'd still be personally liable for every classification decision. The customs clearance is just one piece of a much larger puzzle.
It's the piece with the highest legal risk. I want to be clear about what happens if you get customs wrong. Best case, your shipment is delayed while customs asks for additional documentation. That's a few days to a few weeks. Middle case, customs determines you've undervalued the goods and issues a reassessment. You pay the difference plus a penalty, typically a percentage of the underpaid duty. Worst case, customs determines the misclassification or undervaluation was intentional, and now you're looking at criminal penalties under the customs ordinance.
intentional, doing a lot of work there. How do they determine intent?
That's the uncomfortable part. It's often a judgment call by the customs investigator. If you're a licensed customs agent who made an error, there's a presumption of professional judgment unless there's evidence otherwise. If you're a furniture retailer who decided to clear their own goods and got the tariff code wrong, customs might look at that differently.
The license isn't just about permission. It's about legitimacy. Having a licensed agent creates a buffer between you and the customs authority.
That buffer has real value. I've spoken with importers who've been through customs audits, and the consistent theme is that having a professional agent who speaks the language, literally and bureaucratically, changes the tenor of the interaction entirely. The agent can say, "This is how we classified it based on the product specifications," and have that taken seriously in a way that a self-represented importer might not.
Let's get practical for a minute. If someone listening is thinking about doing this, importing furniture or any other physical product at container scale, what's the actual sequence? They've found a supplier. What happens next?
Step 1, negotiate the Incoterm. Don't let the supplier dictate this. If you're new, aim for FOB or CIF. If you're more experienced and have a freight forwarder you trust, EXW can give you more control and potentially lower costs. Step 2, engage a freight forwarder on your side, not the supplier's forwarder, yours. Someone based in Israel who handles the China-Israel route regularly. They'll quote you on the ocean freight and the destination handling.
The customs broker.
Many freight forwarders have in-house customs clearance. If yours doesn't, they'll recommend one. You'll need to provide the broker with a power of attorney. This is called a Yipui Coach in Hebrew, authorizing them to act on your behalf before customs. Step 4, before the goods ship, get the full documentation package from your supplier. Commercial invoice, packing list, bill of lading draft, and any certificates. Origin, fumigation for wood products, standards compliance. Make sure the HS codes on the commercial invoice match what your broker expects to use.
Fumigation for wood products. That's a detail I wouldn't have thought of.
Wood packaging material, pallets, crates, dunnage, has to be treated and stamped under the ISPM 15 standard. Untreated wood can bring pests, and customs will either fumigate it at your expense or refuse entry. This is true globally, not just in Israel. And if your furniture itself is solid wood, some countries require phytosanitary certificates. Israel does for certain wood species.
The documentation package isn't just paperwork. It's the difference between a container that clears in 2 days and one that sits at the port racking up storage charges.
Port storage charges are the silent killer of import margins. At Ashdod, after the free period, typically 3 to 5 days, you're paying per day per container. Let a container sit for 2 weeks while you sort out documentation issues, and you've added hundreds of dollars in demurrage and detention charges.
Demurrage versus detention. Explain the difference.
Demurrage is when the container is sitting at the port or terminal beyond the free days. Detention is when you've picked up the container but haven't returned it to the shipping line within the allowed time. They're separate charges, they accrue separately, and they're both designed to keep containers moving. A container sitting still is a container not earning revenue for the shipping line.
You're paying rent on a metal box, and the rent goes up the longer you keep it.
The rates are not gentle. I've seen demurrage charges hit $100 a day after the first week. On a shipment where your margin might be a few thousand dollars total, 2 weeks of delays eats most of it.
Which brings us back to the customs broker. A good broker doesn't just clear your goods, they clear them fast. They know which customs officers handle which commodity categories. They know when to file to hit the right processing windows. They know what supporting documentation to include to avoid queries.
They know the unofficial stuff. Every customs authority has its quirks. In Israel, for example, customs valuation isn't always based strictly on the transaction value. If the customs appraiser looks at your commercial invoice and thinks the price is too low relative to what they know about the market, they can issue a valuation query that holds up your shipment. A good broker knows how to preempt that by including comparable pricing data or explaining why your cost is lower. Volume discount, long-term supplier relationship, lower grade materials.
This is the part that's impossible to DIY. You can study the customs ordinance, you can memorize HS codes, but you can't study the unwritten rules of how a particular customs office operates on a Tuesday afternoon.
Those unwritten rules change. Customs authorities update their risk profiles constantly. What cleared without question last month might get flagged this month because there's been a surge in undervaluation cases in your product category. A broker sees those patterns because they're filing declarations daily. You, filing one declaration a month, don't.
Let me zoom out for a second. We've been talking about the mechanics, but there's a philosophical question underneath this. The prompt is essentially asking, can a small business be self-sufficient in international trade? Or is the bureaucracy so complex that you're forced to build a network of intermediaries?
I think the answer is that you're not forced. You choose to because the intermediaries create value that far exceeds their cost. A customs broker charging 1,000 shekels per declaration isn't just filling out forms. They're providing insurance against classification errors, speed of clearance, and a relationship with the customs authority that you can't replicate on your own. A freight forwarder isn't just booking vessel space. They're consolidating cargo, negotiating rates you'd never get as a single container shipper, and solving problems when a container gets rolled or a vessel is delayed.
Rolled? That's when your container doesn't make it onto the scheduled vessel and gets bumped to the next one.
Which happens constantly on the China-Israel route, especially during peak season leading up to Chinese New Year. Your freight forwarder is the one who finds out your container was rolled and gets it onto the next available vessel, rather than you discovering it didn't arrive when the vessel docks and your container isn't on the manifest.
The intermediaries aren't a tax on trade. They're the lubrication that makes trade possible at all.
That's true at every scale. The difference between a small business and a large importer isn't whether they use intermediaries, it's how many they use and how they manage them. A large furniture retailer might have a dedicated logistics team that coordinates multiple freight forwarders and customs brokers in different ports, but they're still using brokers to interface with customs.
Let's circle back to the Incoterms one more time, because I want to make sure we've covered the specific ones that were asked about. The seller handles export clearance options, the true door-to-door, and the common middle ground.
For export clearance by the seller, the Incoterms are FOB, CFR, CIF, DAP, and DDP, basically everything except EXW. Under EXW, the buyer handles export clearance, which is why EXW is generally a bad idea unless you have your own export capability in the origin country.
For the true door-to-door, it's DDP, Delivered Duty Paid. The seller handles everything, including import clearance and duties. It's the B2C AliExpress model applied to container shipping.
It's the one that gives you the least control and the worst VAT position. For most small business importers, the practical sweet spot is FOB or CIF. You get seller-handled export clearance, you control the import side, and you preserve your VAT reclaim position.
If you want the container delivered to your warehouse but still want to handle import clearance yourself, DAP.
DAP is underused, in my opinion. A lot of importers default to CIF because it's familiar, but DAP gets the container all the way to your door with the seller bearing the risk during inland transit. You still do the import clearance, so the VAT position is preserved. It's more expensive than CIF, obviously, because the seller is pricing in the inland delivery leg. But for a first-time importer who doesn't have a relationship with an Israeli trucking company, DAP removes a significant logistics headache.
The flip side, if you've got your logistics dialed in, EXW gives you maximum control and potentially the lowest total cost, but you need to be ready to handle everything from the factory floor to your warehouse.
EXW is for importers who know exactly what they're doing and have trusted partners at every link in the chain. It's not where you start. It's where you end up after a few years of building relationships and learning which freight forwarders and brokers perform.
There's one more piece I want to touch on. The harmonized system itself. You mentioned it's thousands of codes. How precise does classification actually need to be? If I'm importing wooden chairs, is 9401 close enough? Or do I need the full 10-digit code?
You need the full code. In Israel, the customs tariff is based on the HS but extends to 10 digits. The first 6 digits are the international HS code, harmonized globally. Digits 7 and 8 are the EU combined nomenclature, which Israel largely follows. Digits 9 and 10 are the Israeli statistical subdivision. So 9401 is seats, that's the four-digit heading. 940161 is upholstered wooden seats, and the duty rate can differ between the 6-digit and 10-digit level.
Close enough doesn't exist. Either it's right or it's wrong, and wrong costs money.
This is where a broker's expertise is genuinely hard to replicate. The HS has interpretive rules, the general rules for the interpretation of the harmonized system known as the GRI. When a product could plausibly fit under two different headings, the GRI tells you which one takes priority. It's not intuitive. A chair that's also a stepladder, is that furniture under 9401 or a ladder under a different chapter? The GRI has an answer, but you'd need to know the rules and the relevant explanatory notes and probably some customs rulings to get it right.
The chair ladder. The platonic ideal of a customs classification headache.
I've seen worse. A Bluetooth speaker that's also a lamp. Is it electronics or lighting? The answer depends on which function is the essential character of the product. Customs authorities issue binding rulings on this stuff because it's ambiguous.
For the small business importer listening to this, the takeaway so far is, don't try to be your own customs broker. It's not that you can't, it's that the time you'd spend learning to do it competently is time you're not spending on your actual business, and the cost of getting it wrong exceeds the cost of hiring a professional by an order of magnitude.
And the corollary is, spend your energy on understanding the process well enough to manage your intermediaries effectively. Know enough to ask your broker the right questions. Know enough to review the documentation your supplier sends. Know enough to choose the right incoterm for your situation. You don't need to be able to clear the goods yourself, but you need to understand what your broker is doing on your behalf.
Competent oversight rather than hands-on execution.
Which, now that I think about it, is the same principle that applies to most professional services. You hire an accountant, but you still need to understand your own financials. You hire a lawyer, but you still need to understand the legal structure of your business. The customs broker is no different.
All right, let's lend this. For someone who's ready to pull the trigger on their first container from China. Furniture, 40 foot, the scenario from the prompt. What's the one-page checklist?
1. Negotiate FOB or CIF terms with your supplier. Make sure the quote explicitly states which Incoterm and which version. Incoterms 2020 is the current set. 2. Engage a freight forwarder in Israel who handles the China route. Get a quote for ocean freight, destination terminal handling, and inland delivery if you want it. 3. Engage a customs broker, either through your forwarder or independently, and provide the power of attorney. 4. Before the goods ship, get and review the full document package. 5. Confirm with your broker the correct HS classification and the estimated duties and taxes so there are no surprises. 6. Arrange payment of duties and VAT. Your broker will tell you the exact amount once the customs declaration is filed. 7. Once cleared, arrange the final delivery and make sure you have warehouse space ready.
Step 0. Make sure you're registered with the relevant tax authorities as an importer. In Israel, that means having an active VAT registration and being set up in the customs system as an importer of record. Your broker can help with the setup, but you need to exist in the system before the container arrives.
That's an excellent point. If you're not registered as an importer, the container gets held until you are, and you're paying demurrage while you sort out the bureaucracy.
The recurring theme of this entire conversation, paperwork delays cost real money.
And the final thing I'd add to the checklist, build a buffer into your cost calculations. First-time importers consistently underestimate the ancillary costs. Port charges, broker fees, trucking, storage, inspection fees if customs decides to examine the container. A rule of thumb I've heard from experienced importers is to add 15 to 20% on top of the FOB price to cover all the costs of getting the goods to your warehouse door.
That's before you've sold a single chair.
That's the unglamorous reality of importing. The per unit cost looks great when you're comparing it to wholesale prices domestically. But the landed cost, the actual cost of getting the product into your warehouse, ready to sell, is always higher than the FOB price suggests.
Which is probably where a lot of small business import dreams go to die. They see the supplier, quote, do a quick currency conversion, and think they've found a gold mine. Then the container arrives and the real costs materialize.
That's why understanding this stuff before you place the order isn't just academic. It's the difference between a viable business and an expensive lesson.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1950s, a Cape Verdean biologist named Armando Lopez proposed that axolotls could regenerate lost limbs by reabsorbing dormant embryonic cells scattered throughout their bodies. The theory was widely taught in European universities for nearly a decade before researchers in Paris demonstrated that regeneration actually occurs through the dedifferentiation of mature cells at the wound site, not the activation of pre-existing embryonic reserves. Lopez spent the rest of his career studying sea sponges and never published on axolotls again.
Imagine being so wrong about salamanders that you have to switch to sponges.
There's a lesson in there somewhere about intellectual humility. I'm not sure it applies to customs brokerage, but it's in there.
This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flemingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review. It helps other people find the show. We're Korn and Herman Poppleberry, and we'll catch you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.